Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming on a cold Tuesday morning. I'm impressed, actually, how many people are here. So thank you all for being here. As Rachel said, I'm Brandon Grimm. I'm the director of the Office of Public Health Practice at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, College of Public Health. And yes, we do more than treat Ebola patients at UNMC. We have a College of Public Health there. I know we've been in the news a lot for that, but what I'm going to talk about a little bit today is a very large study that was done. I'm going to share just a brief, some of the brief highlights with you about an evaluation of public health leadership institutes around the nation and thinking about how we re-examine the model of public health leadership institutes. If you've been participating in some of the ASPPH-sponsored sessions the last few days, you've heard a lot about reframing public health education. And I also think there's a reframing that needs to be done when we think about professional development, workforce development, education as well. And so today that's what I'm going to briefly share, some of the results of this study of public health leadership institutes around the nation and some recommendations of where I think we need to start moving towards when we reframe and start thinking about the future of professional development, leadership development. So I have no relationships to disclose. Learning objectives. What I'm going to do is explain the four levels of the Kirkpatrick model. The Kirkpatrick model grounded this study. I'm going to discuss the current strengths of public health leadership institutes as leader development programs, and I'll talk a little bit about the difference between leader and leadership development programs, and discuss the barriers that exist in showing outcome-based results from public health leadership institutes. So for those of you that are not aware, public health leadership institutes have existed for about 20 years. The program's length usually ranging from 6 to 12 months. They use a mix of residential and distance learning. And they use a common evaluation as a pre-post competency assessment that usually gets to behavior change and sometimes skills. And we don't actually get to the next step of seeing if there's any outcome-based results. And one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to do this study is because, as I said, they've existed for over 20 years. There was a time when every state in the nation was covered by a state or regional public health leadership institute. And today, that number is drastically decreased. There's probably a handful between 7 to 10 leadership institutes in the nation, and a lot of those become because of funding cuts from not only our governmental agencies, but also some of our nonprofits and foundations. So I asked a lot of them, you know, why are you cutting funding at a time when we know we're going to need more leaders for the public's health? And a lot of them said it's because we haven't been able to show outcome-based results. It's great that we show people are really excited with the training, they're satisfied with the training, they're happy with it. They have some new individual knowledge and skills, but we haven't showed those outcome-based results, and that's what they're looking for. So I wanted to do this study to figure out, okay, is it possible for us to show outcome-based results, and what do we need to do to actually get to those outcome-based results? So what I wanted to do when I put the study together was determine if PHLI graduates are improving skills as a result of their training, and are they using the skills in practice to get to levels 2 and 3 of the Kirkpatrick model, which I'll explain a little bit. And I also had to determine the domains and skills that are necessary to lead. So phase 1 was a qualitative analysis, which I don't have time to go into this whole qualitative analysis of 5 leadership models and the National Public Health Leadership Development Network competency framework. And the reason I had to do this is because there was 5 different leadership institutes from around the nation that participated in this study. And not all of them use the same competency set, not all of them use the same goals and objectives for leadership. So when I looked at what they did use, I noticed there was some overlap, and there was some overlap with some of the different models and theories out there. So what I did was a qualitative analysis of all of these, of 5 different. So what I used was the transformational leadership, servant leadership, appreciative leadership, collaborative leadership, and emotional intelligence, and then the NLN competency framework, and did a qualitative analysis to see if there was overlap between those to come up with the skills necessary to lead. And after that, what I found was there were 6 domains and 21 skills that were common across all of those, and that's what I did. I developed the assessment for step 2, which I'm going to talk more about, the phase 2 of the survey and some of those results. So with those 21 skills and 6 domains, I developed a cross-sectional survey using the Kirkpatrick model that was designed to measure level 2 learning and level 3 behavior of the model. There were 62 questions. Each of the 21 skills included 2 questions. The first question was, to what extent did the PHLI you attended improve your ability in that skill? And the next question was, since completing the PHLI, to what extent have you actually used the skills in practice? Then I also a number of environmental questions related to environment of working environments, their leadership level, rewards, and those types of questions to get. So I could do a lot of cross analysis as well to see, are there things that actually impact individual skill development, skill improvement, or skill use? There was also open-ended questions, two open-ended questions about each of the six domains to try to figure out, are they, just because they perceive that they're using the skills in practice, can they actually remember a situation, a time when they used the skills? So I asked an open-ended question that resulted in some qualitative analysis for them to look back and think about, was there a time when you used this skill? Can you remember a time when you used this skill? And can you remember the specific tools that you used, that you learned to use those skills? To see, because that, if they can remember that, that's how you start to look at, are they instilling behaviors or changing behaviors? So the Kirkpatrick model, for those of you that are not familiar with it, it's four levels. Level one is reaction. This is a measure of how participants feel about various aspects of the training program. We do a very good job with this in public health and workforce development. We ask a lot of these type of surveys. Were you happy with it? How was the room temperature? Was the food good? Was the presenter good? Those are those happiness type surveys, and we do a lot of, and we count numbers. So it examines the impression and motivation of people's attendance. We do a very good job at that. Level two is learning. This is about a measure of knowledge acquired, skills improved, or attitudes changed due to the training. Example measurements increase skills from pre-training to post-training, and it examines individual change in knowledge, skill, and ability. We do a decent job at this in public health and in leadership development, especially with that knowledge gain. We ask a lot of pre-post surveys, but sometimes when we ask them, in workforce development, we'll give a pre-assessment before the training. We'll do the training, which could be an hour, it could be up to a half day, then we'll do a post-training. That's not actually getting at skill development. It's getting at, a lot of times, yes, I changed my knowledge. I have a better understanding of these competencies or these skills or these objectives. So we do get that. We don't get to that skill or that attitude change due to training. Level three is behavior. This is a measure of transfer of training. To what extent does the participant instill or change behavior because of the actual training or development? Example measurements are retrospective evaluations of change in behavior. Could be done by survey measurement, measuring skill use, 360-degree assessments, or interviews. It examines if the training had a long-term personal impact that resulted in behaviors instilled or changed. And level four is results. This is where we want to see more, not only in professional development, in workforce development, leadership development, where we also talked about this yesterday in one of the sessions I was in, one of the caucus sessions, about we need more outcomes evaluation data-driven for our students. You know, what are we preparing students to actually work, to be practitioners? Did the training result in increased sales, higher productivity, community-level factors, improved quality, decreased costs, so that return on investment? That's where we're not getting in public health. We don't have a lot of these outcome-based measures. And a lot of times we say we don't get the outcome-based measures because it takes time. I think there's things we can redesign and redevelop some of the training to actually get to some of these outcomes. So to get to the study population had 517 graduates from five PHLIs around the nation. The five PHLIs were the Great Plains Public Health Leadership Institute that covers Nebraska, Iowa, and South Dakota. The Northeast PHLI, which covers Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Vermont. The Kentucky PHLI, the CDC Environmental PHLI, and the Missouri PHLI. So there was two regional, two state, and one national PHLI that were represented in this study. The individuals had graduated between 2007 and 2012, so every individual at least had to be out at least 1 year, so we could think about this as a retrospective evaluation, and some were out as many as 5 years. The response rate was 40%, 205 individuals. 41% of the individuals identified themselves as mid-level leaders during their training year. Over 80% indicated they worked in governmental public health, and 55% worked in public health between 6 and 15 years. So here's the states. A total of 21 states were represented from the participants. The majority of the individuals came from Kentucky, Nebraska, Missouri, and New York. And then you can see a number of other states, from one individual up to seven individuals, from a number of different other states around the nation. So perceived improvement in use. So asking the questions, those two questions. So across all six domains. So how I analyze this is, what I did was recategorize these into low, medium, or high skill use, low, medium, high. So each domain has three or four skills underneath each of the domains. And then I recategorized based on the score that they had in each of those different skills underneath the domains and gave them a domain score. So every individual had a domain score of low, medium, high skill improvement, low, medium, high skill use. So 84 to 95% of the respondents reported medium to high level of skill improvement. based on their training year. In 91 to 94% of respondents reported medium to high skill use. So pretty comfortably we can say that yes, individuals, based on their training year, looking back, they perceive that yes, I did improve my skills. This training, this PHLI that I attended, did improve my skill, and I'm using these skills in practice. So if they're taking it a step further, not only are they learning about it, they're actually putting it into practice when they go back to their workplace or their community. So that's a good thing. It answers my question that yes, the current model does improve skill. The current model does give the skills so people can use it in practice. That is a great thing. So looking back, so I've taken it a step further to see if individuals could recall situations when they actually used the skills in practice. They were able to, and there was five themes that came out when I analyzed this. The first was interpersonal relationships. So they used the skills during times of developing teams, during team disagreements, staff performance and evaluation. They used them during program and project development. Organizational change. So these are times when you have staff turnover, supervisor turnover. Organizational function, things like strategic planning, quality improvement initiatives. In emergent events, things like budget cuts, environmental hazards, outbreaks, floods and flu and things like that. They remembered using these things in practice. And some of the things they remembered using were individual leadership development plans, the results from their 360 assessment, things when it came to conflict mining. Those were the types of skills, and when asked about, you know, what are the actual tools that you learned and used, those were the kind of tools that they went to. Those very personal, individualized tools that gave them some more confidence, that gave them knowledge about themselves. It was very individualized type of tools. So I also did an analysis to look at the relationship between skill improvement and skill use. And what I found was there was a significant relationship between skill improvement and skill use in all six domains. So as individuals who perceive a high level of skill improvement had a greater likelihood of also reporting high skill use, which again, that's a good thing. I saw that because it follows what the Kirkpatrick model says too. The Kirkpatrick model states that each level builds on each other. So you need level 1 to get to level 2. You need level 2 for level 3 to happen. You need level 1, 2, and 3 for level 4 results to happen. So I was happy to see that that level 1 and 2 were met, because it would be disappointing to see that, yes, they get the skills, but they're not actually using the skills in practice. So we can comfortably say if leadership institutes can actually give the skills to individuals and they're honing those skills, that they will actually take those and use those in practice. So that's a good thing. As I said, there was a number of other different analysis that we looked at as well, relationships that I could share with you later after the presentation, or you can give me your card and I can share them too. So I looked at a number of different factors as far as engagement level, satisfaction level, work environment, if it was discouraging or encouraging, years in public health, motivation for attending, leadership level, and rewards to see if those impacted skill improvement and skill use, and many of them had statistical significance relationships between those things and skill improvement and skill use, which I wish I had more time to share with you, but I would be happy to share them with you at any time. So, discussion. So what does this lead me to think about? So again, it's great. We're improving skills. People are using them in practice. We could stop there and say, we could show people like, see, it's working. We're doing what we said we will do. But the current PHL model is effective at improving those. It absolutely is. And we know that. There's other studies out there. It's brief. There's probably only about 5 or 6 studies on PHLIs around the nation from the last 20 years. But a lot of them show that individuals are happy with it. They're meeting levels 1 and 2 for sure. Like, not a lot of evidence out there for level 3. The study also confirmed that the PHL model is a leader development model and not a leadership development model. So literature confirmed that the mode of delivery of PHLI is aligned with leader development. And this could be the reason why there's limited outcome-based results. And what I mean by that is leader development are models that are very individual-based. It's almost like when we talk about public health, what's the difference between public health and medicine? We say public health, we treat communities, we treat populations. Medicine treats one individual at a time. And that's what leader development is. We're treating one individual at a time. We're usually pulling out one individual, maybe up to 3 to 5 individuals out of an organization and training them together. So it's not changing culture back in the workplace or not changing culture in the community. So it's one individual time, and it's taking a long time to do that. We're sharing, they're increasing their individual skills. They're learning about their individual styles and preferences. So it's not actually that leadership development, which leadership development is more of that social change. You're using leadership development to actually impact communities or impact organizations. Business has been doing it for years and years. About every leadership development business does, it's inside the organization. So they're actually affecting the whole corporation at one time, so everyone has a common knowledge, a common culture, a common language, and that's not what we're doing in public health right now with our current model. So some recommendations: in order to show results, traditional PHL models and evaluations must be modified. Three alternative models include a team-based pull-out model, a training goes to the organizational model, and a community-engaged leadership model. I'll explain a little bit, and some of these are already happening. So the first is the teams come to the PHLI. So right now, there are some team-based models where it might be five people from an organization that come. So this would be more like the whole team, so a whole unit, a whole department. And you can totally, you're probably all thinking, well, there's a lot of barriers to that. People are actually going to leave work for multiple ties, use residential learning and be gone for multiple days. Probably not going to work. This isn't the best model, but it could work. But it would be grounded in the skills necessary to lead, and the teams would have a team-based goal that we're trying to impact. So that's where you get the outcome-based results. They could come with a goal and say, this is something we're struggling with in our community, this is something we're struggling with in our organizational department that we need to work on using leadership skills and abilities. The next model is the training actually goes to the organization. And a lot of us are doing that as well, where we actually go to organizations and try to impact something. But it's more than one time, just in time training, where an organization calls and says, oh, you know, we're having some conflict issues, can you come in and do a half-day workshop? That's great, you hope to resolve them. This is more of an extended period of time, so you're with them for a year, much like they are in the traditional leadership model, but you're actually with them, you go maybe once a month in person, face-to-face for a day, and you're trying to impact those goals that they say, this is the goal we need to work on in the next year. And again, it's grounded in the skills necessary to lead, and there's a team-based goal that you're trying to affect. Now, the gold standard model that would be the best model, in my opinion, I think would work well, is a community-engaged leadership model. It's if you know about collective impact, it's similar to collective impact, where you ground the training in, again, in the skills necessary to lead, and you have a community challenge or a community need. So, for example, you might have a community. A lot of health departments have the community health improvement plans, and they know. Okay, this came up to the top. We have a problem, an issue with underage binge drinking. So you use leadership development and you bring people together from community, academia, healthcare system, governmental public health infrastructure, business members, and media, and you bring them together and you use leadership development. Because in my opinion, if people knew each other's styles and preferences, if they all knew how to handle conflict, if they all knew how to handle change, if they all had the communication skills of leadership, if they all had the composure and balance skills, the transformational leadership, you could work through those changes easier and better together than just bringing together people that don't know a lot about each other, and you try to facilitate some type of change with them. That if you actually use leadership development and have a community challenge and need that you're trying to reach over the year, you could actually get to that challenge, you could actually get to that, and then that's where you get to outcome-based results, to see if you actually get there. Those outcome-based results, you have unified outcomes, that instead of just individual change and individual skill and behavior, you'd actually have something at the end that you could say, okay, we did do this. You might not get to the end result, you might not decrease binge drinking, but you have a smaller objective that you're meeting, and you can show, we did this over the year, this is the outcomes that we have, in addition to increased skill, increased behaviors of individuals. So, I'll leave you with this. To whom, from Louis Pasteur, some of you have probably seen this, to whom devotes his life to science, nothing can give you more happiness than increasing the number of discoveries, but his cup of joy is full when the result of his studies immediately find practical applications. I think that's what we're all trying to do in public health, not only in research, but also in workforce development, to think about how are they actually going to use these and put them into practical applications. How do we actually use what we're finding? How do they actually use the training that we're providing them to use in practical settings? How do we change health outcomes, improve communities, community health? Thank you very much.